You know, we've got, we often cite, you know, a Nintex. We have a former Microsoft leader who works there, Josh Waldo, who, you know, they are just fantastic on building channel and building capability that combines other partner solutions with theirs to really help grow and extend their footprint. Their footprint not only from a geographical perspective, but from a solution perspective in terms of how they take business process and integrate that into office and into different vertical settings and things like that. So P2P, I think, is a way in which is kind of a differentiator of a great partner, in my view.
Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. In this podcast, Vince Menzione, a proven industry sales and partner executive, brings together technology leaders in this forum to discuss transformational trends and to deconstruct successful strategies to thrive and survive in the rapid age of cloud transformation. And now your host, Vince Menzione.
Welcome to the 42nd episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. My guest for this episode of the podcast is Josh Waldo, the Chief Customer Officer for Nintex, a global leader in the business process automation market. Josh and I both worked at Microsoft, and on episode 33, my guest Toby Richards referenced Nintex as a great example of a Microsoft partner that had mastered partner-to-partner engagement, building out its own channel. In this episode, Josh and I discuss Nintex's value proposition for customers, use case examples and market sectors they serve, how he thinks about his channel strategy, what he looks for in partners, and his career journey. Josh, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Vince. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
It is great to have you. I've been eager to have you on ever since episode 33, where Toby Richards and I discussed partner-to-partner play, and he cited Nintex as an organization that has really figured that out in a big way. So I'm fascinated to spend some time with you today, learn a little bit more about the company, your value proposition, what makes your culture and business unique, and a little bit about your career. So thank you for joining.
Sure, sounds good.
So let's jump in on Nintex, the company, and you're in the workflow content management business. So I thought maybe you could take a little bit of time to tell our listeners about the organization. And what exactly is workflow content management?
Sure. And actually, the category, Vince, of the area where we focus is on workflow automation and intelligent business process automation. So really, that means if you are needing to automate anything as trivial as, say, an HR leave request process to anything more sophisticated, such as FDA drug trial approvals, which is an actual use case, you can do that with the Nintex workflow platform without having to be a developer to make these applications come to life.
And so that means that me or I, as a non-technical person who can only do, you know, WordPress blog posts, can actually go utilize your tools and platform, and I could build a workflow or an application.
Yes, that's a possible, Vince. But as I remember, you're more of a sales guy and less of a workflow builder. So we might have to train the heck out.
You remember me well, don't you?
Absolutely. What we typically find are solutions delivery teams in IT or in shadow IT, so an operations team within a line of business, that is attempting to do things in a more agile way, organization-wide, around any kind of business process automation project, to use the Nintex technology to make that happen. That means that they don't have to over-rely on IT, which has a challenge with scaling across the enterprise these days. And they can kind of enable themselves. The person is typically a little bit more on the technical side or functionally technical, but not a developer or a hardcore architect, which are typically get bottlenecked in an organization.
So who would be a key customer in the market for you? Like, give me a use case example where you've gone in and you mentioned FDA is probably a great example, but let's talk through some of that.
Yeah, Vince. Those are kind of typical scenarios that we see. They're either horizontal scenarios that cut across departments, or they're very niche scenarios specific to a vertical or a vertical market or industry. So we have over 7,500 customers across the globe. We have about 1,700 partners. And we're 30% penetrated into the Fortune 500. So that means that a lot of those customers, those 7,500 customers, are pretty substantial enterprises. And we're fairly big across a lot of different industries, such as pharma, FinServe, you know, public sector, retail, healthcare, et cetera. One of my favorite examples of a customer, we actually have this public case study, is an organization out of the UK called Mitchells and Butler. And they operate, I don't know, a couple thousand pubs and restaurants all across the UK. And they had a lot of issues that they were trying to solve that were very manual around safety inspections. So what they did is they used Nintex plus Microsoft Office 365 to enable the pub owners to go and do all the safety inspections on the basically the devices of their choice using Nintex Mobile and using Office 365. And what they're able to do is basically report on anything that might be a risk or anything so that they can solve those issues, keep themselves protected, keep the quality high across that network of restaurants and pubs. And that's one of my favorite use cases just because I really like going into restaurants and pubs.
And where does the application reside? Does it sit in SharePoint and Office 365?
Yeah, so we have a SharePoint application, which is kind of the foundation of how the company started, which sits on top of SharePoint as a platform on-premise. And that's kind of how we started about 12 years ago. Then as Microsoft made its move into the cloud, we were one of the very, very early adopters of Azure and Office 365. So we took a lot of that same similar functionality and made it available in Office 365. And now that's the fastest growing line that we have. So our company has grown, transitioned into a SaaS company as a result of that. We've really made the leap over, and now we're firmly a SaaS organization. And then we've recently come out with the Nintex Workflow Cloud, which is a native Azure application, does not sit on SharePoint at all. And it connects to a whole variety of other systems of record, such as Salesforce, Box, DocuSign, you know, you name it. We've got a connector for it. So that's kind of the journey we've been on. It's all built on the Microsoft platform, but now that extensibility goes far beyond just SharePoint.
So you're driving utilization of Office 365. You're driving Azure consumption with the cloud-based model as well.
That's right. And we're supporting Microsoft's modern workplace pillar very squarely with our technology.
So tell me a little bit about how the company got started. You mentioned the fact that they've been around for about 12 years originally on SharePoint. What was the genesis then? Was it the same business model, or has it changed over time?
Our business model has changed significantly, but the way the company started is we had these two founders, a couple of Australian guys, and they operated an SI called OBS out of Melbourne, Australia. And they were doing a lot of SharePoint work. So their company was doing tons and tons of SharePoint projects. And the pattern across all those projects was the need for more robust enterprise-grade workflow for their customers. The problem was is that the Microsoft tools, although useful, didn't really do the job that they needed it to do. So they saw an opportunity to build a low-code to no-code drag-and-drop capability that an IT person or a solutions delivery person or a functional person in the line of business could enable themselves on top of SharePoint to build robust enterprise-grade workflow. That's how the whole thing got started back about 12 years ago.
And you're the chief customer officer. So can you tell us a little bit about that role and how it's evolved over time?
Yeah, absolutely. So became the chief customer officer back in July. I originally came to Nintex about 3.5 years ago to help rebuild the channel program, scale out the strategy, scale out what the program could deliver for partners, really build some sophistication into our channel model. So I was kind of the chief channel officer for those kind of initial couple of years. As we grew into more of a SaaS company, and I joined right when we started making that transition in a real big way with O365, the business model was changing. And when the business model changes, and when you go more into the cloud as an ISV, the expectation on the side of both the partner and the customer is that you're going to get more involved in the customer experience. And so now that we have a significant portion of our customer base and new customers every month coming on board in our cloud and subscription service, we have to make sure that that relationship with the customer is a solid one and that the customer experience is top-notch moving forward. We never really had to worry about that in the past because in the on-premise perpetual world, the partners would just slip you into the project, they would take care of it, and then the renewals would just come in like clockwork. In the cloud, it doesn't quite work that way. So you have to care about the customer experience. The reason why it made sense for me to become the chief customer officer is because we're a partner-centric company. We've primarily gone to market through partners. And when you transition more to a direct customer relationship as it relates to the customer experience, you better not hurt what you've built in the channel synergy over the years. So since I'm a channel person at heart, we felt that it would really make sense to combine the roles so that we not only think about customer success, but we're always thinking about partner success. And we're being really careful not to disrupt our channel.
So you came from Microsoft and you were in channel roles. And as you thought to build out the channel organization here, what were the things that you brought from your previous experience here?
Yeah, so I saw some really good things happen in Microsoft, and I saw lots of mistakes, as you have as well. And none of that was lost on me. And so I think that when I came to Nintex, I had a really strong foundation. You know, working about 9 years in the channel at Microsoft is probably the best education you could get as a general professional. And I saw all facets and was involved in all facets of pretty much any kind of channel model, whether it was the ISV programs, whether it was the cloud partner ecosystem transformation that we were making, whether it was on the business model side with the CSP program, you name it, the LARS, the incentive programs, all that kind of thing. And I really saw kind of things that I thought were done quite well by Microsoft and things that I just think that should have been handled differently in retrospect. And of course, hindsight is a benefit. But I've gone off of these 10 rules to live by as it relates to building a strong partnership. I actually wrote a blog in MPN about this after I joined Nintex, and they asked me to write a blog. And some of the things in that article is really around things like, hey, obvious, avoid channel conflict. It sounds obvious, but a lot of companies have a hard time avoiding it. And even Nintex, which derives most all of our business, we've been guilty of it from time to time as well. But we hold that as a sacred principle. In every case, do not create channel conflict where you don't need to have it, because your partners are your biggest assets for scale.
What do you do to avoid channel conflict?
Well, for instance, we have no professional services, and we never plan to have professional services. Sometimes that's upsetting to a customer who wants you to deliver professional services, but ultimately it's better in the company's interest if we leave that to the partners, because that's really a huge value proposition for the partners. When we're selling in a deal and the customer says, I want to go direct, I know that this partner brought me into this, but I don't want to work with a partner, I want to buy directly from you. Well, okay, that's fine. We'll talk to the partner. And then after we close the deal, because they brought us into the deal, we'll cut them some margin, even if it's sold on our paper, because we know that that's super important in the process. We also look to attach a direct customer. We look to attach partners to those customers. So everything kind of revolves around how can we make the partner whole in these situations? How do we avoid channel conflict, or even the perception of channel conflict?
That's great. And, you know, we're going to provide links to that blog post in our show notes. I don't know if we'll cover all 10 of those topics or characteristics today, but I think it'd be very valuable for our listeners. So your partners today, some transact and some don't, and are all of them systems integrators or solution providers?
Yeah, so we have what I consider swim lanes of partners. When I was at Microsoft and I was running the cloud partner transformation work under Phil Sorgent, in the Worldwide Partner Group, we established, you know, we always had these partner types. You're a LAR, you're a DISTI, you're a VAR, you're an SI, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
All those walls have really broken down. And if you've been listening to Microsoft at any time, you probably hear them talk more in terms of business model. And that was our initial focus. So we looked at kind of like Maslow's hierarchy, you know, in terms of partner business model. And at the bottom, at the base of Maslow's hierarchy, you got physiological needs, food and shelter, and that kind of thing. And then you work your way up to the top of the pyramid or self-actualization. Well, kind of use that same model to say, okay, what's at the base and what moves up? And at the base, we had transaction. Then we had project-based services, managed services. And at the top, you had IP or, you know, like what an ISV would do. But nowadays, partners span across those business models. So it's really about the business model mix. So that's the first thing I would say. Our partners tend to be the traditional category of SI / VAR, meaning they almost all resell our technology, the vast majority of partners. But they're almost more important. They put more of a priority on the billable services. And a lot of them are now offering managed services as well because it's a more recurring model. So that's the vast majority of our traditional partners. We started with a lot of SharePoint VARs, as you can imagine, but now have a lot of NSI partners, so national system integrators, have larger practices, more diverse practices. And we're starting to work a lot more with GSIs because GSIs are getting a lot of pressure on the digital workspace initiatives to bring in more modern, more flexible, more low code, more things that they can do to increase the capacity of the IT department. So we're having more traction with GSIs. And then of course we work with other ISVs. So Microsoft being the largest platform player that, you know, we work with and that we base our business off of. But we, because of the extensibility of the new technology, we now partner with Salesforce. We bought a Salesforce ISV that does document generation. But everything runs on Azure. So even though when we partner with Salesforce, we partner with Box and DocuSign and other ISVs, our entire platform sitting on the Azure platform. So we have a really good relationship with Microsoft as a result.
And we live in a heterogeneous world, right? So people are using multiple technologies. It makes so much sense.
Yeah, I mean, we're following Microsoft's lead on that in many ways. Microsoft pioneered the, you know, I mean, over the last several years, Microsoft's really, you know, opened up in terms of a platform and drives that interoperability, and we do it as well.
So how do you find and how do you cultivate your partner ecosystem?
So it's been a really interesting experience because in many ways, the partners find us. And some more, I'd say more rare cases, we go and find them and recruit them. We have a lot of inbound requests. I mean, we have 1,700 partners globally. We didn't get that number by going out with a proactive recruitment campaign. But what happens is the partners see Nintechs in an end customer's environment. And they're like, hey, what's this? Hey, this is pretty cool. I'm going to contact Nintechs. Oh, they partner. They do a lot of partnering. And then if we like what they have to say and we think it would be a good match, we bring them on board. In other cases, we've gone outbound and recruited partners where we think there's just an important kind of strategic reason to recruit them. But the vast majority of them have found us. The biggest challenge has been around how you scale that relationship. So building the partner portal, which is more of a partner relationship management system and those kinds of things, how you build that program so that you can achieve scale. And that's where the Microsoft education came in quite handy.
And I noticed that you have three tiers of partners, right? So you have kind of the preferred partner program and then the tiers underneath that.
Yeah. You know, there's a guy by the name of Alistair Cloak on my team who runs the partner program for me. And then Jana Linsenmeyer is another ex-Microsoft employee. And we kind of worked together and said, hey, what do we like about what Microsoft does? What do we like about what Google does? And what do we just not like about either one of them? And let's build the right program tiering structure for Nintechs. What we knew is partners did not want to be created equal. The best partners that were providing the highest level of performance wanted at a minimum some symbolic recognition for being a Nintechs partner at a higher tier. So we knew we needed to do that. And partners come in different shapes and sizes, and we're a global organization. I mean, we're all across the globe and in over 90 countries. And we have partners all over the world. And so you've got to account for it. And maybe a partner that looks small in the U.S., but they're significant to us in, say, Northern Africa, well, I'm going to recognize them for the region as well. So what we did was at the top premier tier, we call them premier partners. It's invite only. It's based off of an objective lens of performance, and it's based off of a subjective lens of exception for those types of situations. And so what it does is it sets the expectation of the only way you're getting in this tier for Nintex is if you're performing, but relevant to the region you're in or the expectations we have. And so we do a bottoms-up and a top-down review of that, and then we change it every end of fiscal year. The middle tier just means an active partner. So the certified partner has to stay up on certifications, minimum certifications, and they have to be selling at least something in that given fiscal year or in that given 12-month cycle. So if I've got a VAR who has an active VAR contract but hasn't sold anything that's Nintex, we're probably going to move them down to the registered tier. And the reason we have the registered tier is because we have a number of companies that just want to be enabled. They want access to the training. They want to be able to talk about Nintex intelligently. They want to be able to register a deal from time to time. And so we keep the door open instead of the door shut. And that's just about being open to new partnerships and to existing ones, even if they're not selling.
So what characteristics do you believe make your greatest partners?
Well, just like anything, sell. and I'm being a little flippant, but I mean there's a reality to that. Is a partner who can execute, a partner who brings us into deals, isn't only looking for a deal from us, but we do that. But they're willing to bring deals to the table. They're willing to go to their existing customer base and say, "Gosh, you know, Nintex is only 20% penetrated in here. How do we get Nintex to be 50% penetrated into my existing customer base? And what kind of billable services can I get out of that as a result?" And how many, what's the renewal money going to look like? Further to that, especially with the customer success focus, we're really looking for partners who will stay engaged and help drive active use of Nintex and keep those subscriptions highly relevant for the customer and for Nintex. And so obviously we pay partners, you know, a healthy margin on the upfront sale, and we pay them on the renewal. But if they don't get the customer to use the technology to the extent that they've purchased it, then, you know, obviously that renewal is not going to happen. So there's a vested interest, but really we're looking for those types of partners that are vested in customer success as well.
So tell me a little bit about the culture and the company. I noticed on your website you've received numerous business awards, recognition of the company, the product, and the people. I thought maybe you could spend a little bit of time with our listeners talking about that.
So it's kind of a funny story. So what I didn't think I was an arrogant person when I worked at Microsoft, but you know, coming to Nintex knocked me down a few levels in terms of my own ego, I think. And I it was interesting because when I was at Microsoft, I was like, okay, well, you know, I'm soaring with the Eagles here. I'm at Microsoft. And honestly, that's true. They're incredible intellect and intelligent people at Microsoft, very accomplished individuals in the company. And that was just a pleasure to work around, and it made me stronger for sure. And so I kind of took that mentality of, okay, well, I'm going to go to a smaller company, a Microsoft partner. And you know, that's saying I'm going to soar with the eagles or I'm going to flutter around with the chickens and big fish, small pond, whatever you want the analogy to be. So I came to Nintex thinking, okay, well, you know, this is going to be an interesting adjustment. And I think within the first week, 2 weeks, I was really surprised. I was like, the people here are incredibly capable, incredibly intelligent, very accomplished. And some of them are just a little younger than some of the folks I was working with. But like anybody younger, you're just learning, right? And what I learned about Nintex is the people are very, very good at what they do. They're all about results and driving results. And there's no hidden agendas. I mean, they're just trying to do the right thing and do their jobs well. And honestly, when you work at a larger company, you don't always have that dynamic. You have politics, you have people that have a hidden agenda, whatever it happens to be. And I'm not trying to paint Microsoft as a horrible place. I'm just saying it's a different dynamic. It's a large company versus a small company. And that was kind of a delightful surprise for me in terms of culture and in terms of intelligence and capability. I've now reshaped my point of view around those types of things.
Yeah, I can share that experience. A lot of people have been through that as well, and that there are bright and talented people in many organizations besides Microsoft, although we did feel when we were there that that was the case.
Yeah.
I would like to spend a few moments, you know, we talk about the art and science of partnering, but one of the things that's come through on the last 40 plus episodes has been about this transformation and just how fast it's been happening, right? And everybody's just been amazed that in 2017, now in 18, that it's happening so fast. What are you seeing customers more willing to do today than they were even a year ago?
For me, it's, you know, really solve some incredibly hairy problems on their own. You know, and of course, hiring partners to help them with it, but not feeling like they have to go through IT only to solve those issues. And I don't know if it's just me opening my eyes after being outside of the walls of Microsoft and seeing all these other technologies that, you know, customers are using, including Nintechs, but it's pretty eye-opening. And as I visited with customers, you know, a lot of Microsoft customers, hard to find a customer who's not a Microsoft customer, but a lot of customers and enterprises, it's this, there's always been this, I guess, this, you know, struggle between IT and the business. Now that struggle is, how does IT enable the business while helping the business not be a victim of their own success, meaning protecting the business from itself? And the space we're in is all about low code or no code in order to get things done. It's around kind of disrupting the status quo and enabling automated business process through, you know, tools that are easier to use and technologies that are easier to use than coding everything or relying on IT. So we have a customer, for instance, who very large manufacturing auto company in Europe, and they issue Nintex driver's licenses to people throughout IT that are enabling the business, as well as into shadow IT. And they're doing that because they're trying to scale the organization with something that's approved, but is disruptive in some ways to the status quo. And it's pretty cool. I mean, they deliver these driver's licenses as certifications for people they trust that can do this in the right way, protect the business from itself, but also enable the business. And I think that is a trend that is so huge that's happening right now, and there's so much opportunity around it.
I love that. Nintex driver's licenses. I
mean, yeah.
Especially if it's an auto manufacturer too. So, but
yeah, I'm sure that was not a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. But what you're saying is, hey, go do something with this, right? Do something, help us transform our business.
Yeah. So instead of the old command control environment of IT, where it's like, well, you know, we use SAP and this must be built in SAP, or, you know, we use SharePoint, and we will get to that. We will build this in SharePoint for you. Now they're saying, go build it yourself. But here's the ground rules, and here's the flexible tools to make it happen. It's an opportunity for IT to be a true business driver in a way that's more true now than ever before, because the business wants to self-enable, and IT's having a challenge trying to figure out how to scale.
So enabling the line of business.
That's right.
So what do you think are the greatest opportunities for continued growth?
Yeah, so we intend to grow in terms of both revenue and profitability within the Microsoft market, as well as in new markets that extend. So as I mentioned before, we have a whole host of partnerships that include Microsoft, but they also include other ISVs and other ecosystems where customers live, the same customers we've had on SharePoint that also own Salesforce and in some cases have Box for something else. So it's really continuing the momentum with Office 365, the incredible growth we're seeing there, and also on the Azure platform. And it's also into markets that we haven't traditionally done a lot of business in, where customers are trying to solve similar problems, but with other systems of record. So that's where a lot of the growth comes. And, you know, as an indicator, when I joined Nintex, you know, 3 years ago, we were 230 people. We're now 450 people globally.
Wow.
You know, and we've doubled in revenue, just about doubled in revenue since I've been here. And the biggest driver of that is SaaS subscription revenue. So you can just imagine, you talked about cloud transformation before. We've changed absolutely everything, but we're growing like crazy a lot in the Microsoft ecosystem, but now in new markets as well. And I think partners are trying to general partners are trying to figure out, hey, beyond just Microsoft, how do I connect into these other ecosystems where the growth is really high? And how do I stitch all this together? And I think that's also a big challenge for existing partners of Microsoft.
Any other advice you would have for partners that wish to work with you in your organization?
Yeah, jump on the train. I'm kind of joking. But, you know, I think partners need to figure out, you know, we always talk about cloud transformation, and you know, we've been talking about that for years and years and years. And I think everybody agrees that that's important. And partners have really transformed to some degree, whether they've done a full business model transformation or whether they've implemented on their old business model cloud technology, some way, shape, or form, people are kind of there. I think the real value is showing value. Forget about the technology paradigm. The value is in showing that you're relevant to the line of business. I think you've got to be relevant to HR if that's where you're selling or that's where your solutions end up being adopted. I think you need to be relevant to finance if that's where you're focused, or to sales ops. I think that relevance to the business is key. You can't just be relevant to IT anymore. You got to speak to the line of business. And there's ways to do that that are natural and ways to do that are unnatural. I personally, and with some bias, admittedly, feel that with Nintex, you can show that value by automating something for the line of business, do it in a quarter of the time and a quarter of the price, and then do the next one and do the next one and show the value and show the trust. So you've got to find a technology that will help you establish that credibility with LOB. We feel like we've got a good proposition for that.
Nice. And so, Josh, you might know from listening to other episodes, I'm fascinated with how people got to this particular spot in their life. And so I'd like to ask you a couple questions about your personal and professional journey, how you got started in IT and the like. Would you mind telling us a little bit more about your background and your story and how you got started in IT?
Well, sure. No problem. Just like anybody who got into high tech, they got a master's in public administration, right?
Everyone does.
Of course, right? You know, you've been to DC a few times. So, I started off a very different path. I went kind of more public sector bent, more political science in college, got a master's in public administration and started working in public affairs as my first job. Did local campaigns in Seattle, economic development initiatives, that kind of thing as a fairly junior guy back in my 20s. When I had a friend who then left that company and went to Oracle, and she basically said, hey, they're paying six figures for people that come over and build PowerPoint slides all day. And it was kind of a joke. But she was having a lot of fun making way better money. And I said, well, gosh, that sounds pretty good. And I've always been interested in technology. And so why not? Yeah, put my name into it. And I ended up getting an interview with this corporate marketing organization. And they had a job for me in Washington, D.C. So I could work with the public sector group, but do a kind of customer-focused marketing out of D.C. for this corporate marketing organization at Oracle. That's how I got started. And it just kind of moved from there. Came back to Seattle, worked for Siebel before Oracle bought Siebel. And then Microsoft partner, and then ultimately Microsoft.
What was the best piece of advice you received when you took this role or when you got started?
I think I'd have to say I give credit to Phil Sorgen, who's now the corporate vice president of enterprise sales in the U.S. And he was he was my direct boss when he was a channel chief of Microsoft. And when I told him I was looking to take this job at Nintex, and he was familiar with who Nintex was, you know, he told me that I was going to learn an incredible amount taking on the responsibility. And, you know, he also said, you know, moving from just talking about it, because I was really focused on cloud transformation and business model transformation and how you do it, Nintex was right in the middle of that. And he said, actually doing it as a partner will be an incredible learning, and that I shouldn't take that learning for granted. And actually, I should think about the learning and the education that I get and how it helps build me as a professional as more valuable than anything monetary that could come from the experience. I think he was absolutely right. You know, I latch on to certain pieces of advice from people I respect. And, you know, it was really great advice. And I've latched on to it. I kept it near and dear. And my new boss here at Nintex, the CEO, John Burton, is definitely a sage and somebody I've been able to learn from. And that learning has been invaluable to me because I've learned things here there's no way I would have learned in a large company. Anything from how every department in this company works, because I run quite a few of them now, to, you know, how does it work with your board of directors and how does it work with the investment community and things that I'm exposed to that I have to say are more valuable to me than, you know, any kind of money that I make in this process. So yeah, I'd have to say that was the best advice, how to be successful at this moving forward.
That's the mark of a true leader, Phil Sorgen, to give you that level of advice when you were leaving.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what advice do you give people that are working in your organization you might be mentoring?
Yeah, well, I've always had this thing I've told people, and I think I said it when I was in the U.S. sub at Microsoft, and somebody asked me, how do I be successful? And I said, work your ass off. Which, you know, sounds pretty straightforward, but I'm pretty results-focused. I'm fairly regimented when it comes to making things happen. And I really believe in some good old-fashioned values, and one of those is just work really, really hard. People don't care how smart you are. They care about what result you deliver. And get the wins, and get them quickly, and do it intelligently. The other one that I've always believed in and that's made me cope okay in this industry since I started, and honestly, when I originally started at Oracle, I thought I'd made a horrific mistake because I had never been in such a chaotic industry and world, and that's been true in every high-tech job I've had. But just be okay with change. You gotta shape-shift. You gotta be a chameleon. You gotta go with it. Yeah. And the last one that I think is really important is don't have your own personal agenda. It just gets in the way of doing the right thing and getting results for the company. And when you focus on what's good for the company, the company's agenda, you get repaid every single time. You get repaid in terms of your career movement, your learning, your capabilities, and ultimately monetary too. I mean, if you're one of these people that have your own agenda and that's what you're focused on, then nobody wants to work with you. So that's the advice I give people. And then, you know, I'm not short of advice beyond that, but those are the core things.
I like that. So work hard, be comfortable being uncomfortable, I guess is the way I would phrase it.
Yeah.
And then
focus on the company.
Yeah. So that's great. I love that advice. Do you have any role models that you have either directly or indirectly? And what advice or attributes did you learn from them?
Yeah, there's one person in particular that I would say was a bit of a role model and inspired me and really kind of, I guess, shaped my attitude to focus on quality and results. And that person was named Lyle Anderson. He was the executive director at an organization called CERTI, which is the Spokane Intercollegiate Research and Technology Institute. Which was a quasi-legislative construct funded by the state of Washington and DARPA, which is, you're probably familiar with DARPA.
Yeah.
And it was all around, it was a technology incubation organization. Anyways, I did some interning for him, and I remember producing something and giving it to him, putting it on his desk back when you put things on people's desks. And he told me, you know, he didn't like it, and he told me, you know, if you do anything, I don't care what it is. I don't care if you are going to, you know, write a memo in those days, or if you're going to make a phone call or whatever. If it's not your absolute best, then just don't do it. Mm. And as simple as that sounds, it's another soundbite that stuck with me. And I really admired him for his focus on excellence and results. And I think that just carried over to how I try to operate.
So Josh, do you have a quote you live your life by or think of often?
Yeah, I got a couple. One that I know who the person is and one I don't. One is, hey, what doesn't kill you will make you stronger. And I think that was Nietzsche. And that's, you know, for me, that one's important because, you know, you go through some really sticky, hard situations in this line of work that is mentally draining and can be quite stressful, can literally keep you up at night, as you know very well. And I think if your perspective is, you know what, I'm going to come out of this stronger and more capable, then you can cope with those situations much better. The other one is, if you buy the ticket, take the ride. That means don't complain. Don't complain about something being unfair or that you're in a particular spot that, you know, if you signed up for it, then take the accountability and see it all the way through. Regardless of how difficult or unfair you think it is, because it's you signed up for it. So those are the two quotes that I kind of like, and I got a million others, but no,
those are two bits of great advice for our listeners. Do you have one book that you've read or gifted often that you'd recommend to our listeners?
Yes. I think, I don't know if one's a book or not, but it was more learnings in college, and it's Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs. It's not a theory. It's nothing. It's more of a reality or a framework of how to look at things. And, you know, as you know, he believed in, you know, what's at the baseline of that pyramid is your food and shelter. Humans have to focus on that first before they can kind of go up the pyramid until you finally reach more kind of, you know, things like self-actualization where, you know, you can really focus on more kind of deeper meaning things. And I think the same comes down to, you know, making important decisions in business. Are you going to build that really cool app that everybody can see and says, wow, that thing is really cool looking and oh, look how I can interact with it? If the back end of that app is, you know, honestly duct tape and rubber bands, right? If you haven't taken care of the baseline, then don't go reach for the top of the mountain. Focus on the stability of something, make it work really well so it delivers results, and then improve on it and innovate from there. Don't just vaporware everything. And I think the other one is more historic, is called Friends Divided. And this is really the story about John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, which is an incredible story if you don't know what it's all about. But this is all about how you can be a super close friend with someone, but have an incredible disagreement, a deep-seated disagreement, and a total opposite point of view of that person, but still admire and be good friends with that person all the way to the end. And that's a fantastic example of two founders of our country that did that.
And we're going to provide links. What was the name of that book again?
Friends Divided. But honestly, if you want to do the more entertaining thing, do what I did, which is watch the HBO miniseries of John Adams.
Great. Well, we'll provide links to both in the show notes.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So one more question. What advice would you give to your 30-year-old self?
Huh. Are we talking about work?
No, it's just on life, really.
Okay, where do I start? Okay, I'll try to keep it on the up and up. So I would say, take the high road at every turn. I had a friend at Oracle named Patrick Enright, a good friend of mine. And, you know, when I first got there, I couldn't believe how vicious some people could be and very petty. And I get kind of consumed in that naturally as a guy in his, you know, late 20s. And I'd want to fire back. And he said, you know, don't roll around in the mud because you'll just get dirty. And he said, just take the high road. That stuff works itself out. Those people come and go. And I took that to heart. And so I think that's advice I give to everybody. I'm like, don't worry about it. Be clinical. Be factual. That's business. Leave the personal stuff out of it. So I would give myself that advice even earlier. And you know, just kind of stay focused on the end goal. Don't get distracted by bright, shiny objects.
It's great advice, especially for our younger listeners who are early in their career.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Josh, I want to thank you so much for taking time from your compressed schedule to be here with our listeners today, taking time to explain Nintex, the company, the value proposition, your career and journey, and what makes great partners. So I just really want to thank you and appreciate your time today.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Vince.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering with your host, Vince Minzione, online at ultimateguidetopartnering.com and facebook.com/ultimateguidetopartnering. We'll catch you next time on The Ultimate Guide to Partnering.